We're good.
We can start?
I'm going to call the meeting to order. For the record, all board members are present. Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Gary Crittle, can you please lead us in the pledge?
We stand and salute. Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. We do have a couple of corrections to the agenda. To start with, if you would turn to page 9 in your agenda. On page 9 at the top, on under number 9, you'll see it says Nicholas D. Wright, and it says MCK slash, it should be MHS slash CCSD. So MHS instead of MCK. And then in the background, it's in just below that, 1, 2, 3, in the fourth line down, you'll see in the middle it says individuals who wither, old, should be either old. Either. Next, if you would go to page 14, please. 14. On page 14 at the top, the next to the last line in the very first paragraph, starts out, lease agreement will buy evidence by the certificates. It should be lease agreements will be evidence. B. And then down in the later in that page under recommendation, okay, looks like a minute ago my screen went blank. In recommendations, in the second line, you'll see refunding certificates, cross out refunding, execution and delivery of the certificate. Okay, then if you would turn to page 16. On page 16, the first line under purpose of the agenda item, request the board approve rephrasing in, should be rephasing, not rephrasing. And on page 17,
hey, is anybody proofreading this stuff? 17, okay.
Page 17 in recommendations, it'll be the same change there. Recommend the board approve rephasing in elementary school, not rephrasing in. Okay, those are all the corrections. I am going to read the statement tonight. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for the majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting, and that you will have an announcement on your phone. We'll let you know when that happens. Thank you. Okay, comments from board members. Trustee Davis.
Sorry, I can't get my muting and my unmuting straight. The one comment I have was really showing appreciation for the donations we've received. to Edgewater, Ella, and Foothill Intermittent Schools. I really think that these are outstanding efforts on the community's part to support the education of these children in our community, and really, really appreciate that. And I hope everybody is doing okay and hanging in there while we get through this COVID. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Yes, I'm going to stray away from the usual congratulations and thank yous. And once again, lead to mental health in our students. And we seem to be bypassing this. I have a friend who teaches in Nevada, and she sent me a copy of the Reno Gazette yesterday. And in her small or medium-sized county, there have been 18 suicides of 10 to 17-year-olds. You might say, well, that happens every year. They've never had anything over the single digits. But that's just, you know, one incident. I want to reflect now on schools to our north and schools to our south. That's only 30 minutes away. As you know, I've been following quite closely Rockland School District and how they have not only begun in school in-person instruction with a combined distance learning where the teachers actually interacted both times. And it's really incredible. I was lucky enough to coordinate and know a history teacher there, an eighth grade history teacher there. And basically, here's how they do it. Group A, last names A through L. Group B, last names M through V. Monday, alternate group days, 8:30 to 106. Tuesday, 8:30 to 2:13. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the same way. It's got its problems, like we've mentioned earlier, but it far outweighs what our kids are going through. Talking to eighth graders, they're my granddaughter's friends, obviously, but just seeing a change in their mental makeup and behavior. I don't know, you know, it just seems to be something we're overlooking here, people. And if you're talking about another 6 months, another year to these kids, 2 years with that connecting, that's wrong. Now, if you look to the north, all I can say is I have a high school teacher friend who teaches at Gridley High School. Yes, a couple kids himself. He's been teaching since October 29th. And this, you know what? Gridley High isn't that far away. He says the same thing I said about my grandkids that he says about his kids, night and day. And no, it's not working great, but he proceeded with his cross-country team. It just was a sense of normalcy that now, you know, I'm not going to get into the COVID and scares. I realize all that, especially 65 and over. But I can't stress enough about the mental health. And for us, it's unconscionable to tell our high school kids to wait another year. Are we really going to do that? 6 months, whatever it might be, when the north section's already voted in to start football again. Anyhow, that's enough of my grandstanding. I do want to thank all the staff and management and all the teachers and everyone for just surviving and getting through this with all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Trustee Bowman.
Yeah, Mr. Crawford brings up some really good points. And, you know, just a few observations. Governor Newsom talks about getting kids back into school. I think he's being put under some political pressure, but yet California is the slowest in the nation to roll out the vaccines. And we know it's not going to happen until we reach some sort of herd immunity or vaccination point. Then we have Dr. Liu telling everybody that we want kids to be back in school this spring, while coming out and saying that we've got a tsunami of a new strain of cases coming in March. Well, those are a little contradictory of each other, and it seems like, that's another good way to panic the public. And then, you know, the start of school keeps getting pushed back further and further and further. We can't come to any kind of an agreement with the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. So the whole thing to me is just a mess. You know, I know we can't control COVID, but On the other hand, there are some of these things we can control. And I think that as a district, we're failing these kids. I've watched what my grandkids go through. I've sat in the room and actually watched them on their Zoom meetings and stuff. And they're not getting a good education right now. Some teachers are doing a wonderful job. I'm hearing of some teachers, especially one in particular at Foothill School, that are doing wonderful things. But some of these teachers aren't doing a very good job. And I think there needs to be a little more accountability there. I'm hearing from principals that they're frustrated on the direction. I'm hearing from teachers, they're frustrating from not getting enough direction. So, and as a board member, I'm getting frustrated. So anyway, somehow we need to figure something out and get this district moving forward in a more positive direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Doug Riddle.
Thank you. Mr. Boom couldn't have said that better. I will say I'm walking into this. There is a frustration level. Yes, absolutely. As a board member and as a parent, I really appreciate all the emails, phone calls that I've received thus far from teachers, parents, community members. And that helps, make me feel a lot better about how I feel about the thing as a parent. And Jeff's right. This is a very difficult time that we're in. It's a unique time. And as a parent, I want my kid back in school. This is frustrating for everybody. And I will say thank you for all your support from the teachers and the parents. Having that information helps guide everyone on this board to make smarter decisions. Thank you.
Trustee Hastie.
Yes, I echo Mr. Criddle saying thank you to everyone who is working so hard. I know it is a very difficult time, and thank you all. And if it's hard, please hang in there. And remember, we're all on the same team. Thank you.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
I don't think I can add anything new to what everybody's already said. So I'm just going to keep it short and sweet. Ditto. Thank you.
I do think that I think we are in a very difficult situation. I think, although I do agree with everybody saying that we do need to get students back in the class, I think that is important. But I think we do have a responsibility to be prudent and try to make sure it's going to be in a safe environment when we put kids back in for our students and our employees. Again, I think we have plenty of safe health and safety protocols in place to be able to go back. But I do think that it's prudent for us to listen to what the experts have to say. I don't think any of us are doctors within the health field to understand this virus as well as our professionals do. So thank you. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen and rest of the board and everybody else who is present. Today, I fielded a phone call from a member that has really just left the wheels turning all day long. And one of the things that I heard in this phone call was a quote or a statement that I thought was 100% valid and correct. And this teacher expressed to me that crisis situations bring out the best, the worst, and the truth. And absolutely, as far as the best, our teachers, the professional educators of Marysville Joint Unified, about 500 strong, and I may be slightly biased, but some of the best educators you'll find in the North State or in the entire state, or in the 50 US states. Hardworking people, resilient people who have trained and retrained and retrained themselves over and over again. People who have fought diligently for their students and for each other. And also, speaking of our students, that would have to rank right at the very top of the best. I've been all over California working on things involved with education. I've been all over the United States. And again, I may be slightly biased, but I believe we have the best students around. They're a dedicated bunch. They're a resilient bunch. They're a bunch that have managed to keep their sense of humor, which I could tell you a lot of us teachers really appreciate because it helps me keep mine. High school students will do that for you. But definitely our teachers and our students have to fall at the very top of this under the heading of the best. As far as the worst, we definitely in this crisis situation have seen this as well. The demonizing of teachers, making us out to be the bad guys and the problem, the issue. We're the ones that need to be dealt with. We're the holdup. We're the problem. The failing to come together. I've mentioned, I don't know how many times, I was born and raised in this community, as a good number of the people that are also on this video screen could claim. And I know that this community can do better. This community has the capability to come together in times of crisis, and we haven't done so in this crisis the way we should have. I've been in this community through floods and fires, and I've seen this community rise to the occasion. And we need to work together to get back to that. But as far as the worst, failing to come together. And also under the worst would definitely fall our bargaining situation from May until now. By far would have to be the worst of this crisis situation. And the truth is that at this current point in time, the district just does not care about its teachers. They don't care about our well-being. They don't care about our professional knowledge and expertise. They don't care about our input, our knowledge of our students and our classrooms. And this is all evidenced by our current bargaining situation, which is actually headed to fact-finding. And lest you be tempted to listen to merely one man who has a vested financial interest in seeing this situation continue on and on, we have a quick slide for you to go through the issues that have brought us here in bargaining to fact-finding. And so I think maybe Mr. Williams may have that for us. So thank you, Brian. So here are the issues. I wish I could tell you that it was plain and simple, and not so much. In regards to our phase two MOU, which is where we are headed to fact finding, we have approximately 20 items that fall into two broad categories or issues. One being teacher workload and working conditions, the other being our professional protections and our professional treatment. And I would hope that I didn't have to use up all this time tonight going through this, but I understand we've tried to reach out to board members, and with people being busy, haven't heard a whole lot back. So figured this evening we would go through this, especially since we have some board members who have only been around for the last 6 weeks or so of this. Falling under our workload and our working conditions, teachers being responsible for teaching either the blended cohorts, A and B, or the 100% distance learning. I understand the school board gets a lot of input or advice stating that MUTA doesn't get to pick the instructional model, that is within your purview. And as we have been told in bargaining, we teachers need to stay in our lane. You have picked the model. The model is the blended learning. What we're saying is here's how it affects our working conditions and our workload. And teachers should be doing one or the other. Either teachers are teaching the blended or they are teaching the 100% distance learning. Within this also, keep in mind, this isn't just about teachers. Within that, if you're going to have teachers try to do both, in essence, it ends up being three jobs, actually, you are going to be creating educational inequities that fundamentally go against what you, as board members, just said that you wanted to have happen, what you wanted to be better, what you want for our students who are the best. Having us do both creates educational inequities that go against the very philosophy, the very foundation of my educational expertise and what I believe to be the best for my students. Also, within our workload and our working conditions, we are asking for the district to go with the SB 98 instructional minutes. The district wants to go with our max contract minutes, which if you go with our max contract minutes, plus all of the other things that the district would like us to do, you are asking teachers to work 12 or 14 hour days. It's absolutely unavoidable. If any board members would like me to show you the math of it, I absolutely can. We've worked it out. They also want to add on some admin and clerical duties to us. You've got teachers that are already working 10, 11 hour days. Even by ed code, the jobs that they want to add on to us by the amended ed code aren't ours. They weren't ours in the phase one MOU either. So we've already agreed on that item once, and now we're going to hassle over it now while we have students that are suffering. We want adequate prep time for our teachers. We have teachers that desperately need and want to do better, even teachers who are doing really well, as some of you just acknowledged, teachers that are mining the internet every day and collaborating hour after hour. They still need adequate prep time to make this happen. The transition time between models. We would like our teachers to have one day of asynchronous learning to make sure that they get ready for the transition into hybrid. And the district has said no to that. There's also been some desire to increase our intervention in our office hours. Only problem being it doesn't fit into a 7-hour, 40-minute day. It doesn't fit into an 8-hour day, nor a 9-hour day. And so then when you look at the next column, as far as the professional protections and treatment, teachers being able to determine their daily live interaction, which we've been doing since August. There again, this was language straight out of our phase one MOU that now all of a sudden the district can't agree with us on. Teacher recordings for instructional purposes only. There are some issues there in regards to, we want to make sure that it is made apparent that any teacher recording, whether it's a lesson or a class period or a class day or a Zoom, that those are for instructional purposes only, so that they cannot be used on the internet for really inappropriate purposes, but also so that they cannot be used unwittingly against teachers for their evaluations. We also would like to reorder the types of leaves taken involving COVID. We have teachers who are concerned that if they or a family member were to get COVID and they were out of work or out of the classroom for 2, 3, 4 weeks or longer, some people are out 5 or 6 weeks, that they could very well end up in a situation where they can't pay their bills. And so we just want the type of leave reordered. We want our catastrophic leave bank. Our leave, our days that we have put in for, bumped up to the second type of leave we take in that situation as opposed to the last. We want contact tracing for classroom visitors. If you're going to be in our room over 15 minutes, we'd like a QR code right next to the door for you to zip in and out. Teacher evaluations, we would like to have just our non-tenured folks evaluated this year because of the fact that trying to get people observed and evaluated in this situation could be difficult at best. We know that we have administrators that are absolutely swamped as well. And so trying to get everybody observed and evaluated isn't very realistic. And so we need to make sure that we're focusing on the teachers that need that guidance and assistance most. We've asked for no mixing of cohorts. We know we're short subs. And so we want an assurance that when we're short subs, we're not going to take all of the students from this cohort and just put them in with another one. Or we're going to divide this one up and put them in two others. We've asked for our work location on Monday to be the same as it is now, where teachers can work from home or from their site. There's also some language in regards to transfer and reassignment, because if we're going to have teachers that are either blended or distance learning, we got to have some language to cover that up. Also with return rights, and then further bargaining if or as things come up and an agreement end date. I understand what many of the board members just said as far as wanting students back in their classrooms. We've had, I don't know how many MUTA meetings where that is the A number one thing about we want to get our students back in our classrooms. And I understand what Mr. Boone was saying as far as, you know, there's things that we can't control and things we can control. One of the things the board can control, one of the things the district can control is actually listening to teachers and valuing our input. We're not just here to say, oh, no, we don't want to, you know, come back. Nope. We're here to say, one, we want to come back safely. Two, we would like to come back in a fashion that doesn't create such an immense workload that you're going to wear teachers out and we're all going to end up sick. And then what kind of education are our students going to get when you've got four or five classes worth of kids who are sitting in a library or a cafeteria with an aide because a bunch of teachers are out because they've been exhausted and worked to the bone? That's not what's best for our students either. You can control valuing our input. You can control treating us like professionals. Those are all things that are within your purview. The truth is, like I said, we want our students back in our classrooms. I was in a lobbying session today with Senator Nielsen's staff working on that very thing. The truth is, though, that we're not consulted. We're not given an opportunity for input. And if we do provide information, suggestions, ideas, et cetera, based on our years and years of dedicated service to our students, that it's ignored. Therefore, by the way, meaning it's not actually input. The truth is that teachers are leaving this district, and they're not leaving because $2,500 is such, you know, an immaculate sum that that's really enticing people away. They're leaving because they absolutely feel that they just cannot stand to be treated this poorly any longer. And that is sad. It should bother you as a board member. It should trouble you as a board member. It should bother this district. And tonight is a perfect example. Board is going to vote on a plan for reopening or rephasing the reopening of our schools. Something that we had no input in. Nobody asked MUTA. Nobody asked teachers. Hey, this is going to be on the agenda for Tuesday. What do you guys think? How could we work together on this? Nobody bothered. We saw it in the board agenda when it came out on Thursday. And so that's how our input is valued. And if you really, really want a visual proof as to how this district really feels about its teachers, here's a visual, something you can control. So, Brian, if I could have the next slide, please. These are the barriers that were put in some of our classrooms for our teachers doing in-person learning. When MUTA asked for $200,000 out of $14.9 million in CARES Act money, we asked for $200,000 for plexiglass barriers, three-sided plexiglass barriers for our teachers and our students. And instead, we can manage over $100,000 in legal fees. We can manage $44,000 for a consultant for my health and wellness. But we couldn't manage $200,000 for plexiglass barriers. Instead, this is what we got. We put together some PVC pipe and then a couple of zip ties for a piece of a shower curtain hung in between. We couldn't even rate four zip ties. We got two zip ties at the top, and to weight it down at the bottom, we've got magnets and a washer. You as board members do in fact have the opportunity and the ability, the power to change this. Say no to the concurrent model, which actually isn't the model that you approved. Improve our working conditions. Respect us, treat us as professional educators that we are, value our voice and our input, work with us to get our students and our teachers back in our classrooms safely and without stretching us so thin and with at least a somewhat reasonable workload. Further overworking teachers will lead to educational inequities that are unfair and entirely unavoidable. And so for tonight, that's the best and the worst and the truth. So I, even though we've reached out, I just wanted to say that if any of the board members had a question or anything, I'm happy to clarify. If there's anything I can offer up as far as any type of explanation, clarification, if anybody has a question for me, I'm happy to answer it. Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen.
Thank you, Angela. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Hello.
Dr. Greco.
Thank you, President Rasmussen. Hello, board, and everybody out there listening tonight. AMACE had a conversation before this, and there was a few points that we wanted to bring up that we feel like maybe aren't necessarily being heard or the standard. So, you know me, I will always come with data. So we wanted to take a minute to share some of the data and the view from where we currently stand. We know from state that distance learning is hard both academically and socially on our students. We're seeing marked improvements in the system and results. But we're still nowhere near the results that we're going to have in person with our dedicated instructors. And that should tell you just how much your teachers are doing each day to keep all of their students motivated and working, both online and in person. It's just much, much harder when they're not there in front of you for you to be able to leverage your relationship with them and keep them on task. So working from home holds less accountability, and students have the ability to shut off the camera and microphone and disengage, making it difficult for the teacher to continue to motivate the students like they do in their classes together. Teachers continue to advance strategies to combat this, but no matter how good we get, it's never going to be as good as in-person instruction, or that wouldn't have been the model that we had always used. But all we can do is work hard and continue to try to be kind, keep emotion out as much as possible, and improve what we have. Continue to improve no matter how school is delivered or what's decided here tonight, and that's our honor that we will do that. I've seen parents and students with school staff coming together and finding ways through this less than ideal situation to make those things happen. And it's not generally the message you get to hear here tonight, but it's happening. And the data that I'm going to share in a little bit supports it to some degree. I reported earlier this year about my concerns on student grades, and especially we were looking at the secondary. So I did want to give a follow-up on that tonight for you guys. For secondary sites, the good news would be that roughly the number of students who had A's in the past are still receiving A's. So the student numbers from the first semester pre-COVID in 1920, we had 5,700 A's roughly in the first semester. In the first semester of this school year, 2021, we had about 5,520 A's in the first semester. So the A's stayed about the same. But in that, it is true that the number of failing grades, as I shared before, has increased from last year with the transition to distance learning. So we had gone from 1,010 Fs last year in the first semester to 4,200 in the first progress report. And those are in the numbers that I shared out the first time. However, it has continued to improve. And while it's not back to where we'd like it to be, we've cut that number in half and we're down to about 2,100 Fs from students. This has happened through hard work of staff, thousands of home visits, intervention centers on campuses where we have students like on Marysville High School's campus, on satellite campuses that are being run by STARS providers and other support personnel. It's forced us to look at our practices and figure out what are the essential components that are most effective and important in student learning. It has advanced our conversations around grading for standard mastery, and we will continue to intervene even further this semester with increased remediation offerings, no matter what's selected here tonight. This is still more Fs than normal, but I think it's to be commended. And you may look at me kind of oddly when I say that. So the average GPA for a passing C student, just average C student, would be 2.0. If you look at the GPAs over the last 4 to 5 years for our district, the average GPA sits between 2.6 and 2.7. At semester this year, we ended at a 2.4 GPA average for our secondary students. So a little bit lower, but still improvement. I wanted to take a minute just to share some of the collaboration. There was a parent, Marcus Hamilton, who gave a presentation. It was an MHS parent. He did a presentation a few weeks back as to some of the struggles that he saw from the parent and student perspective, topics such as the amount of communication and emails that students were getting, the student engagement level in class, the amount of time that teachers are available online for students, and when and how work is being assigned, the consistency of late work, and a few other things. I wanted to take a minute to thank him personally for the time he put into creating his presentation and the work he did behind the scenes. He met with myself, he met with other district staff, he met with teachers, trying to help solve problems instead of just pointing fingers and saying it's not working. He took the proactive parent approach and helped to try and find ways. And for that, I wanted to continue to thank him. And we've continued to work together and have some other ideas on how we can continue to improve moving forward. Views are all over the place when it comes to COVID, from whether you believe that it's the end of the world and we're all going to die, or it's a hoax, or whatever it may be. What I encourage everyone here is we need to work together through our difference and focus on kids. We keep talking about adults, but this is about kids. And if we focus on the kids, that allows us to be better as a community. We are in this together, whether we like it or not. And the only way we get back to where we were and continue to improve while we're not full-time in the classroom is through families being more engaged than ever with students and school, holding us accountable and letting us know where we can improve, and us being responsive to those improvements. After hearing his presentation, we've adjusted our site technology innovator goals for this semester, focusing on student and parent needs moving forward. We've created resources about managing Google communications, drives, and workflow, and we continue to have conversations about how to engage students online on our educational services webpage. And so all of those resources from our district website under parent, student, or staff resources, you can get to that page. And I encourage parents out there, if you have ideas or concerns, please reach out and let me know. The more we hear from everybody, the more diverse perspectives, the better we get and the more we learn, as long as we remain open to growth. The elementary schools have similar struggles with engaging students online through distance learning. Substituting in a kindergarten classroom last year, I was a secondary educator and alternative ed, but substituting in a kindergarten classroom last year, I gained an appreciation for how different classroom management is and how much of the job it truly is in person to manage all of these energetic little souls in the classroom. Now try to manage that online. But through hard work, that's what many of our teachers are doing. They're finding ways, some even reporting better results with certain students. Several teachers have allowed me into their classrooms to give brief lessons or read this year just to the group, which is great. I encourage every educator out there to spend as much face time with kids as they can. And first, before offering any judgment of what our teachers are or are not doing, I encourage you to spend some time in that virtual classroom. And I heard some of the board members say that they've been in and done that. After 30 minutes in a kindergarten classroom, I have to be honest, I had motion sickness because they're all moving around like as fast as possible. I think I met like 15 pets and probably 4 stuffed animals. And I think at one point I resorted to putting a sock on my head, just trying to keep them engaged and entertained with what I was doing while I was there. So it's difficult. And I get that. And I won't lie when I say I want schools open. When I presented the data the first time, that's partially why I did it. I want our kids back in school. I hear what the board is saying. And that's truly what I want as well. But I'd also be a liar if I said I thought it was a plausible thing for us to do given our current guidance. On any given day in a normal school year, our district has between 30 and 90 subs actively working on campus. That's without quarantines. That's without 10-day removals for direct contacts. That's without any one symptom on the list sending you home or a myriad of the other factors from the CDPH that cause an adult to have to be absent. We currently have 14 registered subs actively willing to work and trained to work in our district at this point. This is not for lack of searching, and this is a problem that many districts are running into, especially in more rural communities that are further away from four-year institutions. It's not opening that the issue is, and we keep talking about that. It's having the bodies available to stay open that needs to be considered. As I think you've seen, many places that open end up closing during outbreaks or have to close classrooms for periods of times. And some places do manage to stay open, so that's a reality too. I make this statement from a nonpartisan data perspective. There's no mention of anything other than looking at the road before us. What's best for kids? Distance learning is the demon we know at this point. And when we choose to return kids to school, we need to be able to assure that it's permanent, that it's not in and then out. Talking to families that returned in this last go around and then had to go back on distance learning was hard on their kids, as well as the family routines. And every time we do this, it creates more educational trauma for these kids. So as we look to the issues for this year as Ask Admin, we're also now tasked with this is the time of year where we start planning for next year, especially at the secondary schools. And we have to do that with the total uncertainty of what this year looks like, as well as what next year looks like. we believe we'll get to be back in the classroom, though we have to plan for the first semester, having distancing requirements, possibly being hybrid, hopefully being full day in school. We have to plan not only for that, but we have to look at the learning loss that's occurred this year and how to mitigate that. We have to look at the social emotional factors that have occurred and how to work through that with students. And we have to plan for all of the unseen topics as well, the ones that aren't prevalently talked about right now. Topics like moving secondary schools to a 7 or 8 period day in order to preserve our CTE, music, and elective programs, the things that draw kids to school. We have to have time that's designated and explicitly for intervention to help fill these gaps. They're not just magically fill themselves. When we have teachers available to do this in person to mitigate this learning loss, we have to plan for summer programs away the possibility that we can do them in person. And we need to take what we learned this year from teachers and parents, as well as students, and incorporate it into a plan for next year. And we need to do so like starting yesterday. So AMACE has been on campus every day, trying to run intervention programs, trying to best utilize classified fast staff, doing thousands of home visits, trying to engage and support students and families. And we still know that we need to grow, and we will continue to do so. By creating these campus labs that follow the guidance, all of us are allowed, it allows us to bring our most vulnerable students to school and help provide solid connectivity and support for students who aren't doing as well with this model, as well as allowing them some social interaction and a chance to get some relief from the rigmarole of being stuck in your house continually. As administrators, we're concerned about the morale toll that continually not knowing is taking, not just on the students and families, but on the teachers and administrators as well. The continual planning for every direction is taking everyone down. We need a commitment for a direction to know where we're going. So far this year, we've had 104 cases of COVID on our dashboard that you can see on the district website, while we have been closed to students, showing that people are still getting affected when not at school, and I was one of them, I've had it myself. Even using these numbers, we're not sure how we would open without an infusion of bodies willing to help keep rooms up and running. And we're more than willing to accept ideas on this. We want you to be aware of these factors when you make your choice for bringing students back, because as much as I want students back in school, I don't want to see them come back and have to have them closed out again repeatedly on and on throughout the year. So with that, that's what AMACE wanted us to relay to you tonight. Thank you very much for giving us the time, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. Supervisory unit. Public comment.
Oh, President Rasmussen, announcement of action taken in closed session.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Cena. So I did miss an item back up. Announcements of action taken in closed session. There was no action taken in closed session. Thank you, Mr. Cena. Public comments. For teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage, www.mjusd.com, under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out the public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 549.54.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that the members of the legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 549.54.3. So it looks like we do have a few different categories of public comments tonight. Mr. Carrion, can you be our timekeeper for us? And I do hope that you will be cognizant of your 3 minute time limit. So our first is, looks like this might have come in from our last board meeting, Shauna
Shauna Supat. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't realize last meeting wasn't over yet when I submitted it. So that was why. Anyways, so first off, I'd like to thank the board for allowing me to speak. And for the ones that have made comments that we are failing our kids, I appreciate that. My name is Shauna. I'm a mom of four children, one that is a senior in this district. I'm a para and a coach in this district as well. I would like to begin by letting you know that I am in favor for opening up the school, starting back with our seniors. And I realize that most districts start with the youngest kids, but I feel that we're doing such a disservice to our older children. My daughter, active cheerleader, softball, loves being around people, not necessarily being around people, but she loves to be able to do sports. And she's not able to do anything at this moment. She has good grades. She has always had good grades, and she's lost out on almost an entire senior year. I think it's a very hard thing for most of them. Talking about suicide rates, these kids are depressed. I've had multiple cheerleaders tell me, I don't know if I can do this anymore, and upset. And I've had to talk to them, and thank God we've been able to start back to in-person practice, but it's been really hard. I think that going 2 weeks with seniors only would be a huge boost for them. They deserve it. They deserve to be in school. I know that not everyone wants to be at school, but they haven't even been able to not want to be at school. They don't want to be online, that's for sure. I know Placer County has been back in session and they're making it work. I don't understand why we can't figure it out. I'm not judging. As someone who works in the school district, I would rather be on campus 100%. The recommendations or guidance are just that, they're not laws. It's really frustrating to hear it over and over that this is a mandate and this is a law. It's not, they want us to do this. I understand that, but it's not a law. As for sports, 43 states have done sports, no problem. Why can't we figure it out? I understand that this is a lot of California. I get that. There was no vaccine when most of this was happening, and there's a 99% survival rate. So I don't know why we keep pushing that the vaccine has to be there. And natural immunity is what we want, natural, not injected. I don't agree with having this vaccine put into our community so quickly with it's being untested. That's my personal opinion. Not everyone agrees. I understand that. It should be a choice. If there is a plan to reopen and there's a committee, I would love to be a part of it 100%. I think that parents, students, and staff should be able to be a part of it. It's really hard to not have my voice be heard. This is the only way I can have my voice be heard. I urge you to think of the kids' mental health and the parents and the staff who want to go back. And under my husband, make a decision and live with it. Thank you.
I guess I couldn't tell you I was muted. Thank you very much, though. Next is Gary Rogers.
I'm coming. I know.
Okay.
There we go. Good evening, everyone. I think I probably know most of the people on here looking at the list names, but just wanted to let people know who I am. I'm a parent of a senior and a sophomore at Marysville High School. I've been an educator for 17 years, and I'm currently a superintendent principal in a local school district. So I know full well what the challenges are of reopening and bringing kids back full time, as we just did recently. So it is possible to do. I know my school district's a lot smaller than Marysville Joint, provides different challenges, but we have plenty. And I mean, plenty of examples locally, Chico Unified, Placer County, plenty of schools like Mr. Crawford mentioned. So there are lots of options to look at for a model to be successful. And so it's really frustrating, not only as a parent, but as an administrator, to sit and watch our district fail our students. And I really appreciate a few of the board members' comments tonight about how we are failing our students, because I had this big old long speech plan about how we're doing just that. And I was going to bring a bunch of data, but you know, I'm just tired. I'm tired of bringing the same discussions to this board, like I did back in October, saying the same things about this slow to fail plan that continues to fail our students. That is what we have seen. Like, how many more students do we have on campus today than we did in October? Not many. We went backwards. Failed promises of, oh, we will not close when we go purple tier. Well, we went purple tier, and guess what happened? We sent all of our kids back to distance learning. And now here we are trying to figure out how to get them back in. And here it comes March, and we're going to wait till March to bring them back. There's nothing stopping the district from bringing those kids back right now. The guidance doesn't say you can't. The guidance clearly says if you were open, you can continue refacing in. We do not need Dr. Liu's recommendations or orders. And that's what's been the most frustrating thing as a parent and as somebody who knows the guidance really well. Dr. Liu has made recommendations. She's personally emailed me back and told me the recommendations, but our district continues to follow her word like it's the word of God. And that is ridiculous. The state has put out guidance for this particular reason for us to follow. Not for us to listen to a health officer and say, well, I think this is best. She's one person. The state of California built that guidance with a group of people. And the governor wants us back in. Dr. Fauci's CDC just released more things about getting back, referencing several studies, article today. That's why I was going to send. I can bombard you all with the information, the facts, but no one seems the one to listen to it, and it falls on deaf ears. So it's just really frustrating as a parent to sit and watch us listen to Dr. Liu's recommendations and continue not to do what's best for kids. So I implore the board to do what's best for kids. That's why I'm happy to have three new board members on this board and eventually do what is best for kids. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Next, we have Terry Ulrich. Ulrich, Terry?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I think Mr. Rogers hit it right on the head. And also, Shauna, I feel like you're going through exactly what my daughter went through last year when she couldn't graduate high school. And I think what Mr. Rogers said really is most poignant is that you guys are talking about the same things. You need to get these kids back in school. How is it that you're going to blame either the teachers association or you're going to blame the doctor for keeping us closed when there's plenty of other school districts that are in the state that are back to school? If we can't get these kids back in school soon, they are going to go crazy, because I'm seeing it, the negative attitudes coming from all of the kids. And if we can't start getting it done now, you're going to lose a whole group of kids, and it's just going to get worse. Especially in my line of work, I am not seeing what I want to see from these kids, and it's going to get worse. I don't know. Maybe the teachers need to go on strike until maybe the school district is forced to bring them back with the kids. But I really, really think that you guys need to start putting some pen to paper and getting stuff done, getting us parents included in it, because it is for the kids. It's nothing else. But I'm not going to take up any more time. I think Mr. Rogers said it all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Sarah Hyatt. Sarah? Hyatt? Sarah?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Sarah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Sarah Hyde, and I am the parent of a seventh grader, a sixth grader, a third grader, all within MGUSD. It kind of makes me happy to hear everybody on this meeting saying what they're saying, because it's exactly why I put in my comment card for this. So I'm just going to read what I have here, and I'm sorry that you've heard most of it already tonight. I understand that when COVID first became known in our area, that shutting down schools and going to distance learning was the route taken, but it has been almost a year. If neighboring schools can be open, like Gridley, Wheatland is opening February 8th, Plymouth Lake is open, Twin Rivers Charter in Yuba City, and Faith Christian, just to name a few, then we can and should be also. Distance learning is robbing children of education, it's overworking our teachers, and it's stressing out both the students and the teachers. We have the models to open safely, and it is time to do so. I have spoken with many teachers and children besides my own, and the majority agree that opening is what is best. While some may not want to return, it is completely possible to allow them to continue distance learning like other schools are successfully doing. while opening for the majority. Since distance learning has begun, grades are down, mental health is down. So you cannot say that distance learning is working. I am asking you to look at yourself, your colleagues, and your students, and you will see that our schools need to start reopening now, not hopefully starting March 9th. Thank you.
Check your mic, Randy.
Thank you, Frank. Sure. Angela Spiegel, are you there, Angela? Angela, do you want to talk now or do you want to wait for the agenda item?
I'm going to wait for the agenda item.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have Siobhan Matthews. Siobhan?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to address you this evening. Again, my name is Siobhan Matthews. I'm the principal of Marysville High. I just wanted to take a minute after this last semester to thank a huge team of people who have worked with us to establish and maintain 4 distance learning centers for our Marysville High students so that they could overcome distance and technology barriers and access their classes so that they could earn credit towards graduation. Currently, we have approximately 15 kiddos accessing distance learning at Yuba Feather, 9 students right now accessing distance learning at Dobbins, and 2 students at our Foothill site, in between 15 and 25 each day at Marysville High. So I'd like to thank the principals of our Foothill schools, Dwayne Triplett and Kathleen Hansen, their school secretaries and custodians for welcoming high school students to their campuses. They provide health screenings. They make sure the rooms are sanitized and warm every day. Thank you to Mr. Pantoja and his STARS team for helping us supervise our students when they go to these campuses. Thanks to Mr. Taylor and his team of bus drivers for making sure our kids can get there safely and planning a million routes so they can get there on time. Thank you to Amber Watson for providing snacks and lunches. And then thanks to Brian Williams and his tech team for all their support, expertise, and I swear 1.5 million hotspots to these remote locations. All of this care of our most at-risk students provides that platform for them just to access their education and their teachers. So it is not an easy feat. So we sincerely appreciate the extra care and support of our kids at these distance learning centers. So thank you again.
Thank you, Mrs. Matthews. Next we have Tammy Strozzini. Tammy?
Good evening, members of the board. I hope everyone had a restful, enjoyable weekend. I sure wish I did. Instead, I spent over 10 hours of my weekend doing schoolwork, inputting grades, answering emails, posting next week's assignment in Google Classroom, and the various curriculum apps, all the while having this little voice nagging in the back of my mind from a district person, not even an educator, who once said that teachers don't need to work so many hours. They just need to become more efficient. Sadly, I know I wasn't alone in this endeavor. Many of my fellow educators posted much the same in social media, including one teacher who was doing all of this, even though it was her birthday. This job is taking its toll on so many of this district's teachers. To quote a fellow educator I spoke to earlier in the week, she says, "I'm tired. I'm tired of being made to feel like I'm burdening my admin or that I have unnecessary requests. I am tired of having to always defend myself. I am tired of my admin not having my back and not having any empathy for what I'm going through." This quote was spoken by one, but the sentiment rings true and is felt by so many. This district has a significant morale problem. too many of us have been left to drown in a sea of platitudes of don't worry, you're doing great, while throwing out tiny life preservers, often too little too late, giving us teachers no other means but to float to our deserted island and to be left alone in isolation. I've come to you on several occasions now extremely concerned about teacher workload. In the beginning, it was anticipated, even expected, being as none of us have been through this, and no one quite knew what to expect. But now, as Mr. Sina has pointed out on a few occasions, we're coming up on a year since the start of this health crisis. We are still just as tired, just as overworked, and now just have been hit with more anxiety-filled news that we are now further down the vaccine priority list, that there is a new, more contagious strain of COVID that affects all ages, and according to Dr. Liu, should be inundating the Yuba Center area by early March, just about the same time we're being asked to risk our health and put in twice the work to see kids for in-person instruction. I implore you, please find a way to improve teacher morale and put your teachers' minds at ease. Find a way to take something off their plates. Give your employees peace of mind and be sure staff is vaccinated before kids return to campus. And although it's fallen on deaf ears so many times before, reduce our workload, reduce the workload of the teachers by not forcing them to teach to all students simultaneously in a concurrent teaching model. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rosini. Thank you very much. Next, we have Linda Strang. Linda?
Good evening. As a special education teacher, my focus is on my students and what's best for them. But I find that sometimes in order to do that, I have to take a step back and look at the teachers. Is the plan that we put in place working? Is it the best plan that there is? And do the teachers have everything they need to be successful? And when I do that, my students are more successful. Now, to get that information, I don't go to my administrator. I go directly to the teachers. Now, board members, their priority is also what's best for students, as it should be. But now is the time that everyone needs to take a step back and look at the teachers. Is the plan that is put in place the best plan for the students? And do teachers have everything they need in order to be successful? Now, in order to get answers to those questions, you don't go to the district office. They're not teaching. You don't go to the administrators. They're not teaching. And you definitely don't go to a lawyer. He doesn't know anything about teaching. You go to the teachers. And guess what? We have MUTA in place to represent teachers. And when that's done, students are more successful. I would be very happy if I could see the district office actually communicate and collaborate with MUTA in order to best help students. So what I'm asking you as board members to do is not only tell Gary Sina to collaborate and actually listen to MUTA, but to ensure that he does. Because when that's done, the winners will be the students that we all want to see succeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Strang. Next, we have Erica Schlesler. Erica?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say that, you know, our whole nation is having a teacher shortage. And it's getting a lot worse right now because anybody who can retire is retiring. New teachers who did not sign up for this are deciding to go with their degree and do some other job. And the standards for becoming a teacher have had to be lowered. And we're going to end up having a lot of teachers having to take place of our veteran teachers who haven't had the training. And none of us have truly had the training to do what we're doing right now. But we're doing it. And some of us are doing it better than others. And we, of course, need to focus on helping those that are having troubles. And teachers understand that it's better to teach in person. I mean, it would be insane for us, just for our job security, to say distance learning is the best. It's not. And we would like the community as a whole to follow the guidelines to knock out COVID in our area. Because it's an extra poke in the poke of a stick in our eye when teachers get belittled for wanting safe working environments while their students tell us about the large family gatherings that they enjoyed. I haven't been able to hug my child, my children, since last March. I'm sticking to the guidelines. I want COVID to go away. I'm getting the vaccine as soon as possible. But on top of all of this, our district will not negotiate in good faith with the teachers who are actually implementing this crisis education program. We have to get the attorney out of the negotiations and start showing the respect for our teachers' expertise and willingness to make compromises. Without agreements, you're going to continue to have that confusion about accountability. There's no way for either admin or teachers to have clarity about expectations without a contract. So if we had a peaceful agreement in place and everybody knew what their responsibilities were according to the written agreement, we could all get along a lot better and we could switch this negative energy and focus our energy on working on the problems of distance learning, figuring out ways to have kids socialize via Zoom, set up ways that we can work with them so that they are meeting their expectations and having the mental health help that they need. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Erica. Okay, that ends our public comment until we get to the agenda item. Then we'll bring that one back. Next, we have a presentation, Homeless Education Program. This is Jamie Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. Good evening, board members and Superintendent Cena. I appreciate the opportunity to quickly share with you a highlight of the support our Homeless Education Program has received. I'll be brief because it looks like it's going to be a long evening. First, I would like to echo Randy Davis's comment on our community contributions. We are really so blessed in our community. We created a flyer that will be sent to each of the donors after tonight's meeting. The flyer that is in your board packet, on the flyer, you will see a variety of the charitable programs that we run through the homeless program. Supporters are listed under each of the programs, and a few of the programs, like our Random Acts of Kindness and our Homeless Holiday, had to be tweaked this year to survive COVID, but we were able to be creative. And our great transportation department really assisted us with both of those pivots, and we are grateful. I know you will join me in extending the district's heartfelt thanks to the individuals, the organizations, and businesses that have enriched the services that we are able to provide to our homeless students and their families. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have about the generous support or the homeless program in general.
Board members, do we have any comments or questions?
Okay.
Jamie, I would just like to thank you and your team for all that you do for our students. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. We do have a fantastic team, and I really thank you for the opportunity, for your time, and the awareness.
Thank you. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Yeah, thank you. Together, serving every student every day in every way. And tonight, what we hear is, we're all working together for four goals. One is we all have a responsibility to help slow the spread of COVID-19. We're all working to ensure the health and safety of students and staff. We want to maintain relationships and want to facilitate student learning. And captured tonight, what we've heard from everyone who spoke
is today is the 319th day since the last time we had traditional in-person instruction, and 321 days since COVID really hit us in the face. And throughout that time, we've been working together to get back to that situation. We want to do it, but we want to do it safe. We want to keep everybody healthy. What we heard tonight and what we put back on is, personally, I go to back in August when we were looking at what can we be the best in the world at? What are we passionate about? And what's our engine? And through that is where together serving every student every day in every way comes from. And things we heard tonight, the people who are working so hard to make all this work, students, teachers, the homeless program that Jamie just shared, the people that it takes to put on a distance learning and network of nutrition, cafeteria staff, transportation, all the people who are working in there, including the bus drivers, the teachers, the paraprofessionals, the support, whether classified or teachers, people working together to serve students, to make the best of this situation. And tonight, as we come together in this day, with this time together, this purpose, this resource, and there's three things that you know in this journey that we look at. One is tonight we have three new items on the energy efficiency project, which is an opportunity for our district to generate our own power, upgrade the 1700 lights, the 1500 HVAC systems, make them more efficient, and be able to have a program that is cost neutral and that benefits every school, and so every student, every staff member on campus, and helps improve the learning environment for everybody and makes it healthy and safe. So tonight, and that's the issues with the lease back and the site logic. Also tonight, on January 14th, there was new governance talking about reopening of schools and opening of schools, and that guidance that looking to point out items in the guidance that are being added to our 2021 MJUSD pandemic school reopening plan, and how what's incorporated there in order to ensure the health and safety and to achieve all four of our goals, really. And then also the last item tonight is encouraging or working on this continuous dialogue of looking at when do we reopen elementary schools, open secondary schools, and throughout that process, working on targeted populations. And we've heard from a variety of speakers tonight, and one key piece in it is that we do, well, I mean, it's those four things, that we have a responsibility to help slow the spread, and we want people to be healthy and safe, and we want to do what's best for students. And there's a difference between opening schools and keeping schools open and making it so there's not a yo-yo effect. And so tonight we'll discuss that, look at the guidance, and look at input from stakeholders and do what's right for everyone. So always we're all working together, serving every student every day in every way. And we're trying to achieve these four goals. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Mr. Cena, who provided that new guidance?
Well, the January 14th, the new guidance is from the California Department of Public Health and the state of California through the governor's office as well. And then locally, our public health officer, Dr. Liu, is our county guidance. Thank you very much. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 12-15-20 and minutes from the special board meeting of 1-12-21. Is there any discussion regarding any of those minutes? Not hearing any. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mrs. Hasty. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom? Was that yes, Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Thank you. Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Allison Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items that board members would like to have pulled from the consent agenda? Not hearing any, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. 7 yes. New business. Board of Trustees number 1. Amendment to employee contract with Assistant Superintendent of Personnel Services, Romero Carrion. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the amendment to the employment contract between the Marysville Joint Unified School District and Assistant Superintendent of Personnel Services, Romero Carrion, extending the contract by 3 years from 7/1/21 to 6/30/24. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second, second. Gary Criddle.
Second by Doug Criddle. Any discussion? Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Buildings and Grounds Department, item 1. 2020-21, Buildings and Grounds Department update. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide a Buildings and Grounds Department update for 2020-21. This is an informational item. Do we have Mrs. Lossing or Mr. Barnett? Mr. Barnett.
Yes, good evening. I was hoping to have, Brian, do you have these slides up? The presentation? Mr. Williams?
I think he's looking for them right now, Travis.
All right, perfect. All right, here we are. Well, ladies and gentlemen of the board, I'm pleased to share with you kind of a snapshot over the last year of what our department's been doing. This has obviously been a very challenging year, but so we'll kind of go through this. And I wanted to kind of give you guys an update of where we're at, what we've kind of accomplished. And again, this presentation doesn't cover everything we've done, but it does give you kind of a glimpse of what we've accomplished. So can we go to the next slide? So In 2021, we've had a lot of projects completed. You'll see, obviously, we've had the COVID mitigation planning implementation. We've had Oliver's Playground, hardscape, a lot of shade structures put in, some locker room renovations, lots of tree removals. Just really busy year. Even though things were shut down, we did our best to kind of keep the district up and running and took the opportunity to get some things taken care of that we typically couldn't get to during normal school days. Next slide. So in the last year, fiscal year, we had 484 work orders generated in the last 4 months. In the last 4 months, we've closed 297. In the fiscal year, we've done 1,174 open work orders, of which we've closed 932. That's within the maintenance department. And I have to say that that is pretty phenomenal. And that doesn't include all the COVID planning and the other things that we were doing district-wide. This is just merely your typical maintenance calls. So shout out to our maintenance department for really staying on top of all those during this time. Next slide. This is just, I'm going to go through a couple of examples. Again, these aren't all the projects we completed during this time, but just kind of gives you, you know, where we're, what the board's approved and where that money is going for school sites. This was a parking lot that was redone there in Dobbins. Next slide. Just kind of an example of some of the COVID mitigation and implementation we did district-wide. You saw earlier, Angela Stiegel showed you an example of one of the partitions that the maintenance department had made. I was really proud of the maintenance department. As purchasing, we ran into a lot of issues when ordering a lot of this material at the beginning. It wasn't the fact that we didn't try to get the materials, but obviously hospitals and a lot of different agencies were first to come up. So our maintenance department did a great job going through and getting these stickers out, working with sites, making over 200 partitions while the other plexiglass partitions that were ordered got out to the sites. Next slide, please. This is another example, Marysville High School boys locker room. I don't know if anybody was ever in there, but Siobhan would tell you how in disrepair this locker room was. It posed a huge safety concern. We went through and had this whole site renovated. You'll see in the pictures to the left, a kind of a before. You had broken lights, holes in the wall, asbestos, cracking floor tiles, cracked urinals. Locker rooms were smashed. I think last year a student got hurt on them and got cut. So we were able to epoxy the floors, renovate the bathrooms, working in a partnership with our maintenance department, leveraging our skilled trades and contractors to get this project completed. And it looks phenomenal. If you have a chance to check that out, I would highly recommend it. Next slide, please.
Very nice.
Thank you. Oliver's hardscape. Board members, I'm sure you guys remember over at Oliver's, this site was, again, disrepair. We had potholes, cracking, alligatoring asphalt. It was flooding. Ball walls were brick. They posed another safety concern. There's tripping hazards, gravel everywhere. This was something that was a long time coming for this site. We've got path of travel completed. You know, it looks beautiful out there. So next slide, please. Transportation, our maintenance department did this project. You'll see to the left, the old units. These units probably weighed about 400 pounds or more soaking wet. And you'll see that they were rotting and these were sitting over our employees' heads. Half of them didn't work. So our maintenance department, in collaboration with skilled trades again, you'll see to the right, this was all an in-house project where our maintenance crew stuccoed that entire wall, mounted those units, fabricated all the hangers, really got rid of that safety concern there that was happening in transportation. And I know they're absolutely ecstatic about it. Next slide. District-wide, you know, this is an example of the transportation roof, but many of our roofs in the district are in just huge disrepair. I mean, the needs are great. You've heard me say it before. This roof was leaking. They had pop-up tents actually inside this building for years while they worked during rainy days. So I know, again, transportation a long time coming. We were able to rip that roof off, take advantage of the time that buses weren't really going in there and get that repaired for them. Next slide. Marysville High Library renovation. Again, we leveraged a lot of funds here working with the site and deferred maintenance funds and some out of general funds. And we were able to complete this project extremely under budget. So I remember we got a quote to do this and it came in over $200,000 to do this. And I want to say by the time we're done with this, we were maybe into it $60,000 utilizing our maintenance staff, wanting to get this done for the site. Next slide, please. So this kind of brings me into the next thing. We have some upcoming facilities projects. You've heard me talk about the Linda Elementary new preschool building, McKinney Middle School. We've got a new classroom over there. We're working on the Lyndhurst High School girls locker room renovation right now. Lyndhurst High School, the boys locker room was done about 5 years ago. So staying in compliance with Title IX and making sure equality, we're taking care of the girls side next. We have the Arboga K-8 expansion project kicking off. And tonight you'll hear more about SiteLogic with a district-wide energy retrofit. And then we're also looking forward to presenting to the board a facilities master plan. That's been in the works prior to our new board members coming on board. The board had approved for us to go out for a facilities master plan. The RFQs went out, they've been graded. So you'll be seeing that come to you guys next for approval on the chosen vendor of choice. And we're also getting the transportation bus yard. If you guys have seen that, transportation's bus yard is gravel. So that's something that's, again, something that's been neglected a long time. And if you guys remember over by the district office, all the potholes a couple years ago, it's from all the gravel coming out with those buses and just destroying our parking lots and things. So that's another project coming up. Next slide, please. So right now we're taking care of our ongoing routine maintenance. Obviously that goes for our plumbing system, HVAC system, fire alarms, irrigations, and roof. So currently we have a lot of our maintenance staff out there, you know, keeping up doing the routine maintenance, making sure everything's functioning for when students return. Just kind of typical things we do about this time of year. Next slide, please. So, and I want you guys to take a minute and take this slide in. This is our summer project list. So again, this is kind of a projected summer project list. It doesn't mean that this is what it's going to be and how it's going to stay. But for right now, with looking at kind of a needs assessment on our quasi facilities master plan type of deal that we've kind of put together over 5 years, these are kind of the needs that came to fruition when we sat down with some of my supervisors and sites to come to find out what really is in disrepair and needs to go to this list for the summer. You've heard me talk about the facilities master plan, an extensive facilities master plan is what we need. And so if we move forward with the SiteLogic contract and it's approved, some of these things might change on this list, because as we've heard with the energy program, there is some cost avoidance that would put money back into different funds, which means we could take on more projects or possibly take on, you know, put the funding towards different things. So this is right now where we're standing of what we're looking at taking on for summer. You guys as the board will see these come through. These doesn't mean that these are actually approved projects. These are just what we've come up with on a site basis needs. So in the event that this actually sticks and this is what we end up with, you guys will see the contracts come forward, because a lot of these will go out to bid. And you'll see on the right our funding sources. We have some that are grant funded with general fund. We have a lot of deferred maintenance in this project, $1.7 million of deferred maintenance funds to try and get rid of, you know, try to knock some of these off the list. Next slide, please.
Travis, before, yes. Well, I was just going to add one thing, if I may.
Absolutely.
There were two, if you could go back one, Mr. Williams, there are two projects here that are board approved, and they're just added on because they'll be occurring this summer. Remember that Linda Elementary, we're getting a new preschool classroom. That's $181,000. And then the McKinney Intermediate, the three new classrooms there for the almost $1.5 million. So those have been board approved, and we're performing those now.
Yeah. So thank you for catching that, Penny. You're right. We wanted to get those on there just to make sure you could see that the some of those are grant funded, but those are in place, board approved, and those two projects are sitting in DSA right now. So that'll lead me to the next slide. I know I kind of went through this quick because I don't like to ramble on with a lot of these slides. So again, this was just kind of a snapshot for the year. So feel free to ask your questions on any projects or things that you have concerns with, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Are there any questions?
Davis.
Go ahead.
Go ahead,
Randy.
Well, this is just impressive with really stretching the resources. I'm absolutely thrilled to see the coal lot finally got their shade structure. That's been a project that has been sitting there since I've been on the board. So I'm very excited to see that given all the other challenges, you work that in. So I'm very impressed with the progress you've made, Travis. And I know it's got to be a day-to-day crisis management in a lot of cases, but thank you so much for the update.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
I'll second that.
Other board members, comments, questions? Travis, with regard to the master facilities plan, not only to help guide our maintenance throughout the district, but it seems to me, I remember, isn't there upcoming funding that we could apply for, but that's one of the requirements that the district has?
Yes, you're correct, Mr. Rasmussen. So California passed a bond 8841. Sorry, I've got a lot of different numbers in my head, but yes, part of the criteria when we're looking for these, when we're submitting for state funding, matching funds or anything else, they require us to do our due diligence, meaning that we have to have an extensive facilities master plan. We can't just come to them with kind of, like I said, we have a kind of a plan we've put together throughout different leadership over the years since I've been here, but it's never been a full blown extensive master plan. So in order to get state funding, one of their requirements are that we have this extensive planning, right? That means they're counting our HVAC units, they're checking our square footage, they are looking at roofs, asphalt, they're coming. With a plan that says,
so is that funding source a possibility for next year, or
what the hope is with the facilities master plan? They do their demographic studies. What they would do, they would help guide us in what would be the best route, right? Where to start, so we'd have the best chances of submitting. So if the state's looking at reimbursement for HVAC, we want to have a plan together for that. If it's about roofing, we want to have all that stuff dialed. And what the state's looking for is we come in and we tell them, we've got the funding source, we've got the project, it's in motion, here's our plan. The state's more apt to say, wow, you guys are serious about this. And they come forward and they will help fund it. Now, as far as how much they will give us towards each project, that's an unknown until we submit. So it's like standing up to the table and knowing if we're going to spend $2 million on roofs, we've got to make that decision. We're spending $2 million on roofs and we're going to show it in this facilities master plan. Then we go to the state and say, hey, we're spending $2 million on roofs. And they might say, we'll give you 30% matching back. They might say, we'll give you 50% matching back. But regardless, we're fronting the money, so to speak, in the hopes that the state reimburses us. So that's why it's important that we don't sit back and wait until we're at the back of the line looking for this funding. We want to be at the front of it saying, we have a plan, we're executing the plan, we have the funding for the plan. And now we're just looking for basically leveraging our dollars and making it go further.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. So are we looking at the near future to try to bring those companies forward or the master facilities plan?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, we've made it. We're just kind of looking at right now with the agenda item we're looking at tonight, looking with SiteLogic. A lot of this is hinging on how this kind of goes. As many of you've heard us talk about it, this project is huge. So it really changes the whole trajectory of how we're going to be strategically planning moving the district forward. So we're kind of waiting to see how that works, because if tonight this gets approved or how this works, that plays a huge role in how this facility master plan is going to roll out. Because if we don't approve it, then we have to go a different direction. We still do the facilities master plan, but now I have to develop one that's even further extensive, right? So we're kind of killing two birds with one stone, so to speak. And it's a positive thing to bring an energy management program like we're doing, because we're already starting the ball rolling. So once we kind of have an answer of how that goes, then you'll see the facilities master plan is kind of like the next cog in the wheel, if you could say.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Barnett. And I want to thank you and your team for all that you do for our sites and our students. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Next up, business services number one, 2020-21, MJUSD budget overview for parents. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the 2020-21 MJUSD budget overview for parents. Mrs. Lossing?
Thank you, Board President Rasmussen. Good evening, board members, Superintendent Sina. We have Mr. Williams will put up the color version of the LCFF budget overview for parents. There we go. And I'll speak to this. Let me get my notes here. Thank you. So the district receives the majority of its funding from the local control funding formula, also known as the LCFF. The district uses LCFF funds to build its budget based on the resources necessary to achieve the goals of our learning continuity plan. On September 30th, 2020, Senate Bill 820 was signed into law by Governor Newsom. SB 820 includes a requirement that all school districts and charter schools adopt an LCFF budget overview for parents based on the first interim budget report. The intent is to simplify the district's budget for parents' understanding and as a supplement to the learning continuity plan. Some background on that. In August of 2020, if everyone should recall, Dr. Greco began the process to update our learning continuity and attendance plan due to COVID. This process was extensive and included many stakeholder meetings. Surveys were given, input was gathered, a public hearing was held, and finally on September 22nd, the board approved the learning continuity plan. Tonight, I'm sharing with you the budget overview for parents that ties back to the LCP updated with first interim board, first interim budget numbers. Referring to the chart now that's on display, we are talking about the current year, 2020-21. And specifically, SB 820 wants parents to know how much federal CARES Act funds, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, that we call our CARES Act funds, how much were allocated to the school district. And you'll see that bottom number that's pointing to the blue shade, and it's a little bit over $14 million. Thank you, Brian. As you can see by the chart, we received the $14 million. You might recall that there were a couple of slides in the first interim budget presentation that addressed the CARES Act funds. There was also a slide regarding the types of expenditures paid with those. This particular report is just an overview for the numbers. Other funds that parents should be aware of is the amount of supplemental concentration grant funds that the district received as part of the LCFF. Now, our LCFF is made up of two parts, the base amount, and which is comprised of a per student amount that's grade span weighted. So we get actually more money for our younger students than our secondary grade students. And then the supplemental and concentration grant funds are generated by the number of unduplicated pupils in the district. And those are our neediest students identified socially by being socioeconomically challenged, English learners, and or foster youth. One student can be all three of those, but that's where the unduplicated count comes in as far as how they calculate the funding for that. So as you can see from this chart here, our total LCFF is about $1.26 million. So see, that is where we get the majority of our funding in our general fund. And then the supplemental concentration of that 1.26 is $23 million. And the base, which is the other, which is per pupil, is $79.6 million. And so that's the requirement. If you'd like to go to the next slide, or the next page, I'm sorry, it's a page. And this document is also on our website for anyone to view. This just shows that how much that budget we have in our learning continuity plan. This is much less than usual due to COVID and the information that was gathered when it was approved at the September 22nd board meeting. The orange bar shows that the amount that is in the learning continuity plan that is paid for through supplemental concentration grant funds for our needier, highest need students. And if you'll go on to the last page, Mr. Williams, one more, please. Yes, this is last year, and this is part of the state's template for what they would like to have identified through our LCFF budget overview for parents. And this shows that in a more normal year, even though in March is when, you know, chaos occurred with COVID and the pandemic, we had budgeted $23.3 million expenditures in our LCAP and then actually and through supplemental concentration grant funds, and we actually spent $20.3 million. So that is the extent of this particular report, and I will be following with our charter schools. But does anyone have any questions on this?
Have any questions from board members? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote, Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Business services item number 2, 2020-21 MCAA budget overview for parents. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the 2020-21 MCAA budget overview for parents. Mrs. Lossing?
Thank you. And we have the actual document. There we go. And so the important numbers to satisfy the state requirement through SB 20 is again, and it's kind of dark, but the total LCFF funding for MCAA is $3.8 million, and of that, the base grant is $3.4 million. And about $463,000 of that is supplemental concentration grant funds. So, and, you know, they use those for student internet connectivity, student curriculum and online resources, technology needs, training and professional development, everything that's listed in their learning continuity plan. That's gone through some iterations. The local control accountability plan, then it became the learning continuity and attendance plan, and now it's the learning continuity plan. So that's where we are. But the local control funding formula has not changed, and that's how we calculate our funds. If you'd like to go to the next page. So this year, the total budget expenditure in the learning continuity plan is a little over $220,000, and then the amount that's concentrating on our high need students is 115, almost 115 800. So, and then if you'd like to go on to the last page, this is where they were last year. So almost 710,000 budgeted. And then, due to COVID, they were able to spend about 400,000, about 400,000 of that. So that's the report. This will be posted on our website and will be updated when the LCP is updated again.
Thank you, Mrs. Lossing. Any comments or questions, board members? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second that.
Second by Gary Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom. Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Yes.
Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Business service number 3. Resolution 2020-21/14, authorization to enter into an energy efficiency service contract and facility grounds lease. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to determine whether an energy service contract with SiteLogic Incorporated is in the best interest of the district and approve the resolution for authorization to enter into the energy efficiency service contract. The public hearing is now open. Mrs. Lossing, do you have?
Yes, Jennifer Butler from SiteLogic was gracious enough to offer to give us a brief overview of the project.
Yes, good evening, Board of Trustees, Superintendent Cena, Mrs. Lossing, and administrators. This is an energy and facilities improvement program that will address failing critical infrastructure while providing desperately needed facility solutions like upgrades to HVAC, air quality, lighting, environmental controls, pathogen mitigation, and power generation. The result is a 21st century learning environment for students and staff. This is a budget positive program that leverages energy savings and state grants to save the district upwards of $40 million and is a program with a guaranteed outcome. MJUSD will involve students, staff, and community in this sustainable enrichment program, and our first marching orders will be to do what we can to help get students returned to class. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Lossing, do we have any other? No? Okay. Board members, do you have any questions or comments? Is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we need a motion regarding resolution 2020-21/14. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Was that Mr. Boom?
Yes.
Okay. Motion to approve by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second, Doug Criddle.
Okay. Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have resolution 2020-21/15, finding the energy efficiency project activities on various district sites are exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act and approving and filing and recording or recordation of the notice of exemption. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution finding the energy efficiency project activities on various district sites are exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act and approving and filing and recordation of a notice of exemption. Mrs. Lotzing.
Yes, we have our legal counsel, Bob Thurbin, here from Kingsley Bogard, and Mr. Thurbin is going to speak to this resolution.
Thank you, Ms. Lawson. Members of the board, this resolution is relatively standard in an energy efficiency project, particularly one of this size. Normally, when you have projects, construction projects particularly, at some level, they come under the California Environmental Quality Act. It's a procedural act that we have to follow. There are specific exemptions from that act. This project qualifies as exempt from the requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act. And in order to exercise that exemption, we need to have the board adopt the exemption, this resolution, adopt the exemption, and then we file it accordingly. And that limits any appeal period and dispenses with the compliance with the act, since this project is not subject to the act.
Thank you, Mr. Thurbin. Questions or comments from board members? Not hearing any. Is there a motion?
Only I got one quick question. Something that was discussed earlier, I think Doug brought it up in the first meeting, but we have a timeline in place for all these projects, and this, we don't have to go with the CEQA, we don't have to go through CEQA, but we still have to, do we still have to go through DSA for all these large shade structures? It just doesn't make sense that the timeline doesn't make sense to me with having to go through DSA approval also.
There. Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking perhaps Mr. Barnett has an answer for that.
Yeah, so on different projects, so like the shade, or not the shade structure, the solar arrays and things like that, those will need to be submitted. That's something where site logic engineers, architects and things like that will do the walkthrough, the DSA with them. So depending on the amount of work or planning or design, you know, it's not something that would be hold us up too much. We're really at the mercy, no matter what we do with projects with DSA, but it could be a 6 to 8 week turnaround to get something through DSA. It really falls on site logic and their team, and as far as having their all their ducks in a row, so to speak. You know, it's not like a year, it wouldn't take a year or anything like that, but I know that they're already starting their footwork on some of this stuff. But that kind of helps answer your question. I can't really forecast what DSA will do, but I would say probably an 8 week turnaround for an approval on some of those solar arrays, sorry.
Okay, thanks, Travis. It just looked like that we had a pretty aggressive timeline that we were going to follow. And I know from doing projects in the past, DSA is always, you know, pretty major holdup. So I just was wondering if that timeline was still going to work with having to have DSA approval. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Mr. Thurbin also, we're looking at contract review when it comes to that and turnaround times and things like that. So we are covering basis as far as construction schedule. So Again, we are looking at all that and trying to make the most realistic deadline on these schedules as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Any other questions from board members? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Hastie, second. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Griddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hastie.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Griddle.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we have business services number 5. Resolution 2020-21/16, authorizing the execution and delivery of a ground lease, a lease agreement, a trust agreement, a certificate of purchase agreement, and a continuing disclosure certificate with respect to the execution and delivery of the Marysville Joint Unified School District Certificates of Participation 2021 Energy Efficiency Project. Authorizing the execution and delivery of such certificates, evidencing the principal in an aggregate amount of not to exceed $40 million. Authorizing the distribution of an official statement in connection therewithin, and authorizing the execution of the necessary documents and certificates and related actions. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution authorizing the execution and delivery of a ground lease, a lease agreement, trust agreement, certificate purchase agreement, continuing disclosure certificate, and authorizing staff to take all necessary actions for the execution and delivery of the Marysville Joint Unified School District Certificates of Participation for 2021 Energy Efficiency Project. Whew. Mrs. Lossing?
Again, I would be deferring to Bob Thurbin, our legal counsel, and our contract. Mr. Thurbin?
Yes, these are the documents that are necessary to put the financing in motion. And they work in conjunction with the documents that were previously approved by the corporation in the earlier meeting. So they are all part of and necessary to complete the complete financing transaction.
Thank you, Mr. Thurbin. Any other questions from board members? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve, Gary Criddle.
Motion to approve, Gary Criddle. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hastie.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen. Yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. I think this is exciting times to get to start to work with SiteLogic. And thank you for everyone for all the work that you've put in and the folks putting together our funding stream to be able to make this a cost neutral and to be able to provide a better learning and a better teaching environment for our students. So thank you all for all the hard work that you've done. I guess maybe the worst is just starting, eh?
President, questions? I don't know if the board needs a break before we go to the next items.
No.
We've been going 2 hours. Okay.
Okay, next we have student services. Student services. We are going to take the public comment card for this item. Mr. Okay.
What? Pandemic reopening. Oh, okay. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Williams. It's for the next agenda item, not this one. Okay. So student services number one, 2020-21 MJUSD pandemic school reopening plan update. The purpose of the agenda item is for the staff to share with the board a summary of changes and additions that will be made to the 2020-21 MJUSD pandemic school reopening plan based on the new public health guidance provided through 114-21, reopening in-person instruction framework and public health guidance for K-12 schools in California, 2020-21 school year. Mr. Cena?
Yes, thank you. On page 15, there's the background of where, as a district, we've traveled really since the beginning of July regarding the 2021 pandemic school reopening plan designed to address our four goals: to slow the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate learning. As working on this plan on October 13th, the board approved this reopening plan, which serves as a school safety plan. It's also the plan we needed to share before Dr. Liu, before we could reopen schools when we were applying for the waiver, as well as, for in-person instruction. And so moving along, we've been updating that plan. You see a copy dated October 7th, and most of the updates that we've had have been from the guidance that has been ever evolving. And then on January 14th, the California Department of Public Health and the governor came out with new guidance. And this guidance makes some significant change to the guidance that was approved October 13th. And so tonight, what we'd like to do is staff would like to share a summary of changes and additions to how it'll be made to the plan. Now, first of all, we have a set of slides, and just on this first page, if we're on the first page, this guidance is a directive for reopening schools or opening schools safely. And there's an important focus in this plan. When you look at, okay, well, how is it different? Well, there's two fundamental concepts that are different. One is that science and data is showing that students up to 10 years old, it's not prevalent, the transmission among those students. And as long as health and safety protocols are in place, it's safe to operate schools preschool through sixth grade. At the same time, an important focus is that the science and data does show that adults pass or transmit the virus. And so there is emphasis, as you're listening, to slowing that spread among staff. So that's the introduction, and that's the important focus throughout this document that you see transcend. In terms of this new document or this new guidance also shares an adjusted focus. And tonight, our Director of Early Childhood Education, Kathy Woods, is going to explain that.
Good evening. Thank you, Superintendent Cena and board members for this opportunity. The January 14th CDPH guidance emphasizes the layering of mitigation strategies and stresses the importance of using these strategies in combination with one another. You're familiar with the slide, the fist that we have down in the bottom of this slide. And these five strategies, like five fingers, come together to form a fist to fight COVID as we keep our students, staff, and community safe. In the January 14th CDPH guidance, there has been a reprioritization of mitigation strategies based on determining which strategies are most effective in reducing the risk of transmission. So previous state guidance identified face coverings, social distancing, healthy hand hygiene, symptoms check, and disinfecting as the top five mitigating strategies. In CDPH's reopening in-person instruction framework, we see now that face coverings, social distancing, healthy hand hygiene remain in the top five. However, CDPH has added stable groups and ventilation to the top five because there is stronger evidence to support their use in slowing the spread of COVID. And we define stable group as a group with a fixed membership that stays together without mixing with any other group for any activity. And we also want to note that ventilation stresses the importance of providing fresh air in all school classrooms and shared workspaces when safe. But Gary, I think that's my slide.
That's it. This document's 50 pages long. And again, that important focus, one key element of that is preventing staff-to-staff transmission. And Assistant Superintendent Personnel Services, Romero Carrio, is going to share about face coverings.
And certainly we've all learned how important face coverings is and benefits us all as we try and minimize infections throughout our community and our nation. And as we look at the face covering updates, we also need to emphasize that the district has always used CDPH guidance as our willingness to be flexible and understanding how we put in protocols to protect everybody. And now that protection is even at a lower level because all students, including preschool through second grade, are required to wear face coverings. And it's also important to understand that not all face coverings are created equal, and certainly the effectiveness is by no means equal. And in doing so, we understand that we want to encourage in face-to-face communication with staff that they wear three-ply surgical masks. Obviously, any covering is important, but even more so, it's more important to stress the surgical mask. And it's also noteworthy that our athletes and our students in PE and even under heavy exertion are required unless there's a medical or mental exemption that needs to apply. But we certainly want to stress that face covering is important and we want to adapt to the new guidelines.
And the adjusted focus that Director Woods spoke of mentioned stable groups. And so our Director of Student Services, Jessica Guth, is going to help break down what stable groups are.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. As Kathy mentioned, stable groups is in one of the top five of the important pieces to keeping the spread of COVID at bay. Stable groups replaces cohorts that you saw in our reopening guide and is defined on page 18 of the new CDPH. It has a fixed membership that stays together without mixing with any other groups for any activity. And students can be placed into stable groups that stay together all day with their core teacher. We are still using the term cohorting with our students that we're currently serving in person for those students, specialized populations and other vulnerable populations. We use cohorting, the term means no more than 16 people within the group. A stable group does not have a certain number of students that are required in that group. So contact tracing has a different direction with this new guidance. You can see page 32. Instead of the whole cohort being quarantined for 10 days when there's a positive case, contact tracing can be used to identify particular members within the stable group to be quarantined instead of sending the whole entire group home.
The bedrock in the adjusted, or the any focus mitigation for preventing the spread of COVID-19 is social distancing. But in this guidance, there is a difference. And so our executive director of student engagement, Dr. Rocco Greco, is going to break down the difference. The new guidance on social distancing.
And really, to be brief, we're trying to highlight the changes from the old to the new here. And I think the big change in this one, as you look at social distancing in the classroom, is we've continually heard throughout the pandemic, 6 feet apart, 6 feet apart. Much like the word unprecedented, the word practicable has become used in favor throughout this. And what you heard in the original guidance was desks would remain 6 feet apart when practicable. But without a situation of trust, the word practicable creates a dangerous paradigm for everyone. You start to wonder if practical, does that mean that we're going to put everyone back in the classroom? So the real change here with the new guidance is simply that it defines a minimum criterion. So we aim for 6 foot. That's the standard that we're looking for, but it sets a minimum of 4 feet of distance in the guidance. So even if you can't maintain the six and it's practicable, you come down, you cannot go below 4 feet of distance between. That's the change in this pair.
And as Director Woods mentioned in the beginning, adjusted focus includes ventilation. So here tonight to explain two different contexts of the adjusted guidance with ventilation. Again, Director of Maintenance, Grounds, Facilities, and Director of Maintenance, Grounds, Facilities, and Custodial is Travis Barnett, and also our Director of Transportation, Greg Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Yeah, so I mean, when we're looking at the HVAC systems, as you can see, it's one of the top things that we're looking at here. So I just want to state that with these new guidelines, we've already been in compliance the entire time. However, just as a reminder, district-wide, we have all HVAC systems set to continuous air, which means that we're bringing in all new outside fresh air circulating and exhausting back to the outside. So when we say circulating air, those are in continuous air mode. We've also are encouraging our students and staff to keep windows and doors open when possible to keep as much fresh air entering the class as possible. To further our efforts, we've been changing all the filters district-wide every 90 days, and where applicable, we've been able to put MERV 13 filters. You've heard me say it before, not every single HVAC unit can take a MERV 13, but we have done our best to try and retrofit all of the units that we could with MERV 13s. But we're keeping close records on when the filters are changed at each school site. And we're also now exploring the ionization units that actually get put into the HVAC units. So when SiteLogix comes on board and starts switching out these HVAC units, they're also going to be putting in these ionization, which is pathogen mitigation, as you heard them talk about. So again, we're doing everything in our power to make sure that our students and staff feel comfortable and that we're following the guidelines set forth. Thank you.
And along with the classrooms, the buses are to provide ventilation. Obviously, we'll just have enough windows to provide that. Some things to take into consider are such factors as the students with special temperature needs, and as well as extreme temperatures outside, such as this morning or what's going on right now. I'm done.
Okay. And as we're moving along in your handout that board members have, the page numbers is the reference from where we're or on the slide. You see the page numbers. That's where you want to check the information that we're basically placing from this guidance into our reopening plan. Hand hygiene remains a pillar as a mitigating factor in slowing the spread. And disinfecting takes, is still a mitigating factor. It just takes a slide down on the priority list. And to share how hand hygiene has an impact on playground structures, our Director of Student Attendance and Discipline, Jolie Critchfield.
Hello. Well, this is good news. We can finally take the signs off the playground equipment, and kids will be allowed in their stable groups to use the playground equipment. The focus is going to be on hand sanitization before they play on the equipment, and then after sanitizing their hands as well, while, of course, wearing their face coverings. So that's it.
Yes. And as we said, as even though cleaning and disinfecting isn't included in the top five, it's still in the top seven. And so in guiding your view of how cleaning and disinfecting is consistent with the previous guidance, again, Director Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. And as he, as Mr. Cena keeps stating, although it has fallen a bit off the list, not fallen down, but it's moved further down the list as far as prioritization, you know, cleaning, disinfecting, we're still continuing to do it. We want to make sure that, you know, our custodial staff is keeping our classrooms, office spaces disinfected and clean. So their routine maintenance as far as them going through and doing their jobs, they're trained, we're not pulling back because, again, although it's fallen a little bit further down with the CDPH guidance, like we saw on pages 25 and 27, we're still going to continue to do our due diligence. So we just want to make sure that all our staff and students community knows that just because it's fallen off doesn't mean we're going to back up. So a lot of this stuff involves soap and water, which a lot of people can, you know, go in there and clean these spaces. So we just wanted to let everybody know that in the custodial department, we're not backing up, so to speak, just because it's fallen a little bit lower down on the list. And we're going to continue to do this. And we're going to continue to train our staff on proper disinfecting and cleaning habits.
And reducing transmission from adult to adult, again, is an important focus and an emphasis in the new guidance. And Assistant Superintendent Carrion is going to explain how this guidance particularly emphasizes that concept.
Absolutely an important focus. And we've always been committed and diligent to enhance the social distancing paradigm, and certainly want to ensure and continue to communicate to our staff that at any time that there's interaction, often face-to-face, that they maintain a 6 feet from each other. Want to ensure that any opportunities for staff to come together, some sort of congregation, that ideally, preferably, if it's professional development or other forms of instruction, that it be done virtually or in an outside setting if feasible. And we want to ensure that at all times that they maintain that 6 foot distance relationship.
And in the new guidance, the way we call balls and strikes, contact tracing, and how we define what a direct contact is, has been updated, and Director Goof will help define a direct contact that we'll use, the definition we'll use from now on.
So within our contact tracing efforts, we identify direct contacts when we have a positive case on campus. Previously, a direct contact was a person that was within 6 feet for a total of 15 minutes. The new CDPH on page 32 describes it as with being within 6 feet of another person for 15 minutes cumulative over a 24-hour period. So that may be broken up within the day, but it's now cumulative minutes instead of a total of 15 minutes in one setting.
Thank you. And direct contact, as we know, can turn into positive cases. And so the new guidance introduces a new term called outbreak. And again, Assistant Superintendent Personnel Instructor Personnel Services, Mr. Carrion, is going to explain what an outbreak is.
Yeah, for our intended purposes here, we want to minimize the fear and the threat, of course. in order to maintain the best learning environment, but we need to be sure that outbreaks are investigated, local health department, along with the district, collaborating to ensure that 3 confirmed positive cases over a 14-day period in an exposed workplace would then be classified as an outbreak. We want to ensure that in all of those situations, we maintain communication with the local health department and minimize or at least ascertain as to whether or not these outbreaks or these transmissions are as a result of a single home or trying to track whether or not the contamination is within the school to minimize any outbreak.
So outbreaks now become the determinant for school closures. And to explain how that process is outlined in the new guidance, again, Director Goof will help us understand.
When we identify our positive cases and our direct contacts and potential outbreaks, we're in constant communication with the local health department. There are 3 different ways that could invoke a school closure. So the first way could be that an outbreak has occurred in 25% or more of the stable groups within the school. There have been at least 3 outbreaks have occurred in the school and more than 5% of the school population is infected. Or the local health office determines that school closure is warranted for reasons such as case rates, positivity rates, ICU beds, availability, hospitalization, or other epidemiological data. Once schools are closed for any of these reasons, they may reopen in 14 days and in consultation with the local health department and after cleaning and disinfection along with public health investigation. I want to assure you that, again, we are in constant communication with the health department. We are monitoring and collecting data regarding any of our positive cases and direct contacts.
And a reminder, keep on that slide, a reminder that this is a directive from the, if you look at the very first page, second page, it talks about third page, that it's a directive. And look at item C there about the local health officer determined school closure warranted for reasons. The lens or the data that's used to make this guidance are the case rates, positivity rates, availability of ICU beds, and hospitalization and other epidemiological data. So when we have outbreaks, or if we have an outbreak at an exposed workplace, then in the new guidance, there's a requirement for testing. And so testing for COVID-19, and Dr. Greco will help explain.
Okay, so when you look at this, we talk about cadence, and that's gonna come up in a minute here, but really the new guidance to try to define what the change is for you just as quickly as possible. And this is one where I'm gonna explain it briefly, but I would encourage you to look at 39 and 40, because there's gonna be variations of this based on which tier you're in and as we progress through what the cadence of testing for people would be. So the first type is symptomatic testing, and this is one that everyone should be familiar with. It's one we've been doing all along. I show up at work, I'm coughing everywhere, I'm full of phlegm. They're like, hey, you're not passing screening, you're symptomatic. I go and then I go get tested. So that would be symptomatic testing, and that would be kind that we're already doing. The second kind, or response, is what we're doing with essentially the contact tracing. So I came to work, I felt okay this morning. By noon, I'm showing symptoms. I go home sick, I get tested, I turn out positive. They're gonna contact trace everybody who was around me in that day and met the criteria that you heard Director Goof talk about earlier. So some people get identified as direct contacts. Those people should all then go and get tested as well to make sure that we're able to contain any outbreak that I may have caused by coming. The new one or the change is the asymptomatic testing. And the timeliness or how this goes on, the cadence of that is really defined by where you're at in the tiers. So again, I encourage you to look at it for detail. But this allows us the recognition that there are a lot of people with COVID that will have it in their body, but never get to the point of proliferation where they're going to show symptoms or be symptomatic on the outside. So they're asymptomatic. when you see them. So they're not displaying anything visibly. So what this does is it sets up a pattern of time for when these other criteria are triggered that we are testing people who are asymptomatic as well. And that's the addition to this piece of the guidance.
So if you think of layers of Swiss cheese, right, as a layer of cheese, and it's got holes in it. And so it's solid, but there's holes. But you put another slice of Swiss cheese, and it'll cover some of the holes, but not all of the holes, and it'll reinforce in areas. And so like Swiss cheese, we've got face in all this cumulative guidance now, we have face coverings. That's one slice of Swiss cheese. Then we also have another, the second is social distancing. And then healthy hand hygiene. Those are three solid. And then you add to it now stable groups and ventilation. And then we've had disinfecting and our screening, our symptoms check. And now these three types of testing. And now to share another mitigating factor, another slice of cheese is our director of categorical services, Jamie Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. The CDPH strongly recommends that all persons eligible to receive a COVID-19 vaccine receive them at the first opportunity. And as we know in Yuba County, immunization focus is on community members age 65 and older. Currently, people under 16 are not eligible for the vaccine since trials for that group are still underway. And on page 41 in the CDPH guidance is a link to a separate vaccine guidance document specifically for school vaccine implementation. Because this area is rapidly evolving and changing, the school immunization guidance may need to be updated on a more frequent basis than the overarching guidance.
Yeah, so vaccines in the guidance, vaccines are not required to open schools or reopen schools. They're another mitigating factor, and everyone is recommended to take a vaccine. And then we'll go ahead and show the next slide. And that, so in the new guidance, there's also a transparency and an accountability element to it. And so again, Director Guth will share how that's structured.
Okay, so starting yesterday, our district reported to the CDPH what model of instruction we are providing. Every other Monday after yesterday, we will be reporting whether or not we are providing in-person instruction full-time, in-person instruction part-time, such as the hybrid model, or in-person instruction and services are only provided to vulnerable populations within the cohorts, or if no in-person instruction and services are provided and everyone is on distance learning. This information will then be collected and displayed on a website, a web page for people to see on the status of each school district. The data is collected for the entire school district, so they want us to report what the majority of our school district is doing if we have different grades and different serving different models.
Okay, and also in our guidance, it's not that it's been changed in this January 14th guidance. You won't see it in there, but on December 14th, the youth sports guidance was updated. And that guidance, but you did receive a copy of that. It was sent to you after our board meeting that week before winter break. And that guidance is very, very helpful because it helps align all the counties, all the tiers, and helps bring a unified set of expectations and health and safety standards for youth and adult recreational sports and activities. And
So that was on December 14th, and we're going to include it in our, it's a dual purpose. It's our pandemic school reopening plan. It's also our COVID safety plan. And also in our COVID safety plan, we will include our COVID prevention plan, which is our Cal/OSHA plan. So all of this in an omnibus plan to help demonstrate what health and safety protocols we're utilizing to ensure health and safety of students and staff. And just out of interest for that, because it is so, there is so much interest is in athletics that just very quickly that in the purple tier, and here we get into, I'll come back to it, but in the purple tier, sports such as cross country, golf, swimming, tennis, track and field are permitted. In the red tier, the county has to be in the red tier to participate in baseball, softball. In the orange tier to play football, soccer and volleyball. And then in the yellow tier, students are able to participate in indoor basketball and wrestling. So back to the purple tier, there's varying grades of purple tier. And if you look on page 11 of the guidance, so you, all board members have a colored copy, hard copy of the guidance. And on page 11, it references there for reopening schools, the case rates need to be below 25 per 100, per 100,000. And that guideline or those mechanisms transcend the sports guidance and the health and safety guidance. So there's within the purple, there's certain thresholds that we need to work through. And then we'll go to the last slide. Okay, so the idea here is this was presented on January 14th. As you said, looking through it, the key areas of important focus and the adjustment of focus, and then looking at what our current practices are, which are in our the last updated copy of the pandemic reopening plan. And then we're in the process, we're finishing up this week, we're going to match what's in the new guidance that needs to change, in some cases replace, update, or clarify what we're operating now, so that we're operating under the new guidance. So that anything that we're doing, how do we do it, or how should we do it? We should do it according to how California Department of Public Health is directing that we do. So we look to post this on our website by February 1st. And as you can tell, there's a lot here to the guidance we had before came in spaces of time. This has come, you know, at this abrupt time, and there's new vocabulary. There's new, there's a little twist to things we were doing. And so, clarifying that we'll be getting those out distributively to stakeholders. You know, how do you eat an elephant? You eat them one bite at a time. How do you look at the updated guidance? We do two or three at a time. And, right now, the airwaves have been dominated with the new guidance and direction that's been coming out about vaccines, which you've seen, and so that's we appreciate you reading, listening, and thinking about the summary of updates and additions. Thank you, Mr. Cena. Do we have any questions or comments from board members? Mr. Steen, I would just like to thank you and your team for being able to put our, I think this might be our seventh update of our pandemic reopening plan. And, you know, once this comes out on February 1st, it seems to me that this is our marching orders that the district says this is the way we're going to make it happen. And I think then it gives everybody a clear direction. If there's a question, I think you can go back to that reopening pandemic plan and you should be able to answer those questions. And I think the other thing that's important is making sure if the district says this is what we're going to do, then they need to be held accountable that yes, this is what we're going to do. And I think that really comes back into earlier on when we talked about trust. If we're saying that this is what is going to happen, then it needs to happen. And I feel very confident that it will happen. But thank you again for all your work on putting this together and your team. So this is only an informational item. Thank you. Student Services number two, the 2020-21 MJUSD Pandemic School Reopening Plan. Okay, this is where we had a public comment for Angela. Angela, I do want you, are you there, Angela? So Angela, just a reminder, this is still under the public comment section, so you are limited to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Randy, can you give me just one quick second? Our power just went out and came back on, so just 1 sec while I flip the switch. Oh,
timer's not on yet, Angela.
Sorry.
That's not good. Well, we had our lights flicker over here a minute ago. We were kind of worried.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the union office is going to hold out for power for the entire meeting. So, as far as the reopening plan, get my 3 minutes going here, and the rephasing, there were a couple of questions from teachers in regards to the idea of not even knowing how we could possibly have input in this when there's no mention of what that actually is in the board packet. We're not sure if that means everybody TK through 6th goes back on March 9th, if that's the intent, or if it's back to the TK through 1st and then add a week. That's not in the board packet. So that was a bit on the misleading end of things and wasn't all that helpful. Also kind of confused about how we can be voting on a reopening plan when we just, as far as I know, we're talking about the reopening plan being updated. Don't know when that's going to be available. So it kind of seems like we may slightly be putting the cart before the horse, but it also seems like we didn't do a really good job of giving the public or the teachers all of the information they needed to even be able to provide any sort of input. And again, to reiterate what I said earlier, we still have had no input in the reopening plan, clear from the summer through October through now. The teachers and the teachers union have had zero input in the school district's reopening plan. And it's really quite sad and disturbing that that is continuing on to now. The school district had plenty of opportunity and time to ask us for input before this was put on the agenda Thursday. They've had opportunity since Thursday, and we have heard crickets. And so I don't know if there's any possible way for anybody to somehow along the lines answer any of those questions. But along those lines, we've got questions about contact tracing and testing. I mean, we were just mentioning in this the testing and talking about how MJUSD has been testing. MJUSD hasn't tested anybody as far as I know. We do have people that are told in their screening that they need to go get tested. So is the district going to provide testing? Do we have any update on anything? I mean, we are way short on information tonight. So I may actually have another question later on, but I'll try to save that 30 seconds.
Okay, Angela, sorry, you're finished with your public comment?
I remembered what the